Time now for three stories you should know, and this week I'm joined by Patrick Ruby, contributing editor for Vice Sports, and by our own Karen Given. Welcome to you both.
Hi, Bill.
Howdy, Bill.
Karen, you sit right next to me all week, so I know your story. It has to do with a suspension handed down by Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred, right?
Absolutely. So on Tuesday, Rob Manfred announced that Yankees relief pitcher Aroldis Chapman would be suspended for 30 games under the league's new domestic violence policy. Chapman accepted that suspension, to which I say yay, although he does point out and insist that he did not, quote, harm his girlfriend. And I want to just take a second to say he admitted to firing a gun, not in her general direction, but anytime a gun is used in a domestic violence situation, harm has been done. But I think that there are some lessons maybe that could be learned by the way this thing was handled. First of all, Major League Baseball negotiated a policy with the players' union so that everyone knew how domestic violence would be defined and so that everybody had some sort of stake in making sure that this policy worked. And there was some behind-the-scenes negotiations to make sure that this policy wouldn't be under fire the very first time it was used. Was this a perfect response? No. There is never a perfect response to domestic violence. But I think it was a great start. And if we compare it to the NFL's handling of Ray Rice or Adrian Peterson or Greg Hardy or, I think we can give Major League Baseball a thumbs up.
Well, look, I mean, if we're talking about how the NFL has done it, and that's the bar we're comparing it to, I mean, that is like the world's lowest bar. I mean, we're down in the Mariners' trench. You know, I think I agree with Karen from a standpoint of, like, it was a lot less knee-jerk. One aspect of that, why I think it went down that way, MLB Players Union is by far the strongest players union in sport. And that matters. And I think we see it in something like this. It can never be perfect. It's going to be hard for leagues to ever wade into sort of being like pseudo criminal justice system. But I think you're going to end up with better policies and better practice of those policies when you got a strong union counterweighting against the league. You don't just have like a commissioner like Roger Goodell stomping around doing whatever he thinks is right in that particular day.
I would bring up one other thing that bugs me a little bit about this. There was gunfire involved. I think somebody who's off shooting a gun somewhere ought to be suspended for a longer time. And who knows, it might be one small step towards a more rational policy regarding guns in this country, which is infamous for slaughter by gun. Patrick, what have you got for us this week?
So my story involves the shirt-doffing penalty kick hero of the 99 Women's World Cup, Randy Chastain, who we all love, we all remember. Earlier this week, she announced she's going to donate her brain to the Concussion Legacy Foundation and the researchers at Boston University that have been doing so much work that we've heard about, studying the degenerative brain disease, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which most of us know as CTE. We need to learn a lot more about how concussions and brain trauma affect females specifically. I was at a female concussion summit here in D.C. last weekend, and the big takeaways from the studies and the information they presented is that women actually may be more susceptible to concussions. They may be more likely to experience longer and worse post-concussion symptoms. But the other takeaway was that there's a whole lot that the medical community just doesn't know about these gender differences, and they don't know it because very few people have studied this. Back at Boston University, for example, that CTE brain bank has over 300 brains. Only 7 are from women. If there are these differences, and there seem to be, understanding them is going to affect treatment for people who suffer brain damage. Maybe this shouldn't just be one gender fits all.
This has come up many times on our show, and I'm always sort of shocked and saddened by how little research has been done. And when I talk to people, how sort of unaware they are. But my favorite quote from one of the stories I read is she's talking about what she said to her 9-year-old son, Jaden, and he was a little confused about why mom would give away her brain, you know, like she would need it. And she said to him, you know, this is a long time from now, Jaden. You don't have to worry about it. The Title IX generation that Brandi Chastain is part of is not the first generation of women to play sports. We need to find those women and tell them, you know, this isn't just a football problem. We need you to join this research.
Yeah, I agree. I think there has been probably too much concentration on football. And of course, that is in part because of the culture of denial and obfuscation characterizing the NFL throughout the first many years of this entire thing. And you're right, she's only 47, so I don't think we have to worry about her brain being donated anytime very soon. Meanwhile, I fear that my story lacks potential for controversy, although perhaps one of you will surprise me. Major League Soccer's 21st season begins this weekend. Season number one drew a little under 3 million fans. Last year, MLS drew over 7 million. More games on TV. You don't have one guy owning a whole bunch of teams. Almost all the teams now play in actual soccer stadiums. Seattle draws about 45,000 fans a game. Maybe Frank DeFord is not the only sports commentator who thinks pro soccer cannot ever succeed in the U.S., but I submit that he has less company than he once had. Patrick, what do you think?
I mean, it's already succeeding. Just look at the numbers you cited. I mean, it's growing. Sort of every indicator you would look at, you're seeing slow but steady growth. And you're also seeing, by the way, the sport in general is much more popular in the United States. When people aren't watching MLS, they're watching English Premier League, they're watching Barcelona, they're watching Real Madrid. I mean, it's not hard to find the best soccer in the world. That's probably the place where MLS needs to catch up still. The quality of play isn't really there compared to these other leagues. When that happens, then I think it will have come all the way and it will really be like that third or fourth major sport.
Karen, you sit right next to me at work. You know how I feel about the beautiful game. But go ahead, if you're so inclined, argue that I've got it all wrong. It's okay with me.
Oh, Bill. I have nothing against soccer. I have nothing against the MLS. And if you want to promote that sport, go at it. But I say that you're using the wrong script. 45,000 people attended games in Seattle. Who cares? I mean, if 45,000 people jumped off a cliff, would you jump off a cliff? I sound like my mom right now. But, you know, I think that sports are about storylines. I think that sports are really about storylines. And when we talk about other sports, you know, we talk about the NBA this season. We talk about it's Kobe's last season. NFL, we have this never-ending talk about Deflategate, and I hate talking about Deflategate, and I would still rather talk about Deflategate than talk about 45,000 people go to games in Seattle to watch that team play.
Wait a minute. You're inviting me to get more soccer stories into Only a Game. This has turned out better than I ever could have imagined it would turn out. My guests this week for Three Stories You Should Know have been Karen Given, who's hardly a guest since she sometimes hosts the program. Thank you, Karen.
Thanks, Bill.
And Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports, who must almost feel like a regular by now. Hey, Patrick, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.